Chapter 12.
Rylan?
Zoe whispered in a fearful voice, and we continued to stare at each other in shocked dread for a solid beat before we both snapped out of our terror and scrambled down the terrace ladder. Zoe and I hit the inner courtyard and flew through the gate just as Mel and Bowden jogged out of the carriage house wearing similar expressions of concern. They were holding dual Omite rock lanterns, which I was grateful for due to the fact the moon was finally waning and the light was only half as powerful as it normally was. The raccoon brothers lit the way over the rocky downward slope, and I couldn't help but wish my feet could grow wings like Hermes from Greek mythology so I could transport myself to the barn faster, especially when I was just close enough to hear the heart-wrenching sobs coming from inside the half-toppled structure. "Rylan!" I hollered, as all four of us raced to open the doors.
"Alex!"
he cried back, and I nearly went insane with the need to get to him as soon as possible. Because the structure was leaning worse than before, it made it difficult to pry the rickety doors apart as their awkward angle dug them into the dirt. The rusty hinges gave a creaking wail, and dust rained down as the entire structure shook as if it was a pile of matchsticks just waiting for one strong gust of wind to bring it down.
"Mercedes, this thing's gonna fall apart any second now,"
Mel graveled out in his rough voice. Distressed grunting and crashing noises could be heard just on the other side of the door, and I remembered the Porax, Ben, and Jerry were also inside.
"Bowden! Mel!"
I gritted out through clenched teeth as the four of us continued to struggle with the door.
"The door jam's too warped. We need to break through. When we do, get the Porax, and I'll try to get Rylan."
"What do you want me to do?"
Zoe asked as one of the wooden planks broke away from where we were all pulling on the door.
"Go around back,"
I huffed, and ignored the wooden slivers biting into my palms.
"See if the back door will open, in case we need to exit that way."
The lithe catwoman took off without anything further, and the rest of us made short work breaking through the doors. When there was finally a gap big enough, I shouldered my way through and stumbled into the crooked barn dimly lit with more rock lanterns hanging from the leaning support beams. Only a few were still standing after the hayloft had apparently collapsed, and sitting in the middle of the spectacular wreck was none other than Rylan, sobbing and holding his leg, which stuck out at a funny angle. Something about this very scene sparked a niggle of recognition deep within my brain. But for now, that was shoved to the back burner as the structure gave another groan, and I was reminded this place was about to fold like a house of cards. In fact, the reason the barn was still somewhat standing was because of the wall Bowden and I reinforced earlier. But now, instead of the structure leaning to the right, it was leaning all the way left, as if the opposite wall just couldn't make it another second, and the rotted hayloft was the only thing that kept it together.
"Rylan!"
I called out, and the boy only sobbed harder as he reached his hand out to me. I immediately ran and crouched next to his shivering form.
"Hey, bud, what'd you do to yourself, huh?"
"I'm sorry, Alex,"
he wailed, as his face screwed up into a rictus of pain, and my heart twisted in my chest.
"Bowden told me the barn was off limits, but I needed to—"
"Alex, there's too much debris to get through the back door. Do you have Rylan?"
Zoe's urgent voice floated from the back of the barn, and I saw she was right. Most of the fallen hayloft was in the way, which made it impossible to access the exit.
"I have him. Wait for us outside and stand clear of the barn."
"Yes, husband,"
my cat wife replied. I looked back over my shoulder at the raccoon brothers as I squeezed Rylan's hand.
"How are the Porax?"
"We just managed to calm him down,"
Bowden called to us as he soothed Jerry's flank.
"You take the boy, and Mel and I'll follow behind with the Porax."
"Okay, you hear that, Rye?" I said to the weeping boy clinging to my tunic, and then I carefully picked him up. He cried out and turned his face into my chest when his leg was jostled, and my heart drummed funnily again when I thought of how close he came to being crushed by the rotted loft. In fact, it was a miracle he wasn't trapped underneath the rotting joists and moldy hay, and I held him just a bit closer and marveled at how fragile he seemed, almost like he weighed nothing.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry,"
Rylan murmured, and I could feel the dampness of his tears bleeding through my shirt.
"Shh, it's all right. You're going to be okay."
I eyed the creaking slanted ceiling as it continued to rain dust on us and kept my pace steady. There was something menacing about the collapsing barn, as if moving too fast would anger it. So, just to be sure, I took it one sedate step at a time.
My leg really hurts,
Rylan hiccuped, and I experienced a fierce stab of protectiveness for the little ragamuffin who had somehow wormed his way into being a fond pain in my side. I've got you, I soothed him, and I walked us out through the broken barn doors to where Zoe was waiting with one of the rock lanterns. Her eyebrows were pinched together, and she reached out to run a hand through Rylan's wild hair, as if she needed the physical confirmation he was okay. I could relate.
Have!
Came the sound of Mel's voice as he tried to pull the second Porak, Ben, out through the slanted doors that kept refusing to budge, now that the structure was well on its way into the arms of gravity. Since Ben was the bigger of the two beasts, the sides of his carapace scraped against the crooked door jamb and almost lodged him tight like a cork. But the combined efforts of the raccoon brothers had Ben popping out right as the whole barn folded and collapsed on itself like an ironing board. Now that we were all safe, Cattlebugs included, the fear I'd felt since I first heard Ryland's helpless scream finally dissipated and left me feeling hollow with relief. If he would have still been in there when the barn fell, he would most likely have been killed. As the dust cleared somewhat, so did my previous haze of panic, and in place of my earlier shell shock, a quick flash of anger suddenly flared through me. I clenched my jaw and carried the little brat over to a small stump so I could set him down and look him over for any more injuries.
What were you thinking, coming here when Bowden told you not to?
I couldn't help but reprimand the foolish boy as a continuous stream of tears poured silently down his pale cheeks.
I left something in the hayloft,
Rylan said as he hung his head and stared down at his knobby knees.
I wanted to get it before you tore down the barn.
What was so important you just had to risk your life for?
I demanded, and tried not to raise the volume of my voice too much. But it was difficult because I recognized why I was reacting this way, even though the feeling caught me off guard. It was the slightly sickening lurch of relief that made me feel like I narrowly escaped almost falling into the Grand Canyon. It was a dark and razor-sharp fear waiting to tear me apart with its claws the moment I let my mind even entertain the dangerous thought of, what if? Mainly, what if I had been too late?
Well,
I barked, and the part of me not simmering in rage felt guilty when the dejected boy flinched at the tone of my harsh voice. Rylan hung his sandy head even lower as he dug around in his pocket for something while I scowled down at him with my arms crossed over my chest, much like a disapproving schoolteacher.
I didn't want this to get lost,
he mumbled as he held out a miniature wooden carving of a canterfly with a leather cord strung through it.
I wanted you to have something when you got back, so...
Ryland's words dropped off as he held the carved pendant even higher in his trembling hand, but he kept his eyes averted. That hurt expression, as if the kid fully expected rejection, but held out his offering anyway like it was his very heart on a platter, was what caused the anger to slough off me like water. And I knelt back down to his level so I wasn't towering over him. "You got this for me?" I asked gently, and took the carved figurine from his fingers.
"I made it myself,"
he said, and timidly met my eyes with his brown ones still shining with tears. My eyebrows arched, and I looked back down at the canterfly so I could observe the details. Up close, I could tell the fine touches like the billowing mane, its spread wings, and six galloping legs frozen in mid-flight, had been done by a skilled hand, and I couldn't help being impressed. It was really well-crafted, and the fact Rylan had put so much time and thought into this little gift caused my heart to turn over again in my chest, as if the stupid organ was trying to make more room for itself in my ribcage. "Hey," I said, and placed my hand on his head. "I'm sorry," I yelled. I shouldn't have done that. I didn't like seeing you in danger.
I'm sorry,
he said again, as more tears spilled over and traced silvery tracks down his dusty face. I just couldn't let him cry like his toys were being broken right in front of him, especially considering I might have contributed to some of those heartfelt tears. So I pulled him by the back of his neck so he could cry into my shoulder while I hugged him. Rylan, bud, everything's okay. I tried to soothe him, even though I was flailing inside. I wasn't really good with kids, but comforting the distraught stable boy didn't feel as awkward as I figured it would be. In fact, after realizing just how fond I was for the urchin while simultaneously experiencing the icy bolt of fear of what it would be like to suddenly lose him, the hug was kind of for my benefit, too. Sneaky brat, making me like him and stuff. I grimaced as I wondered if I was hugging him properly, but when I glanced at Zoe over the top of Ryland's shaggy head, the rest of my uncertainty faded at the expression on her face. Her eyes sparkled, and she smiled at me as if I'd painted the sky itself. Then she nodded her head, placed her hand in the middle of her chest, and mouthed the words, "I love you," and my blood sang in my veins.
"What be this?"
A screech came from behind me, and I turned to see Madame Midgeon hurrying down the slope from the manor.
"Imagine me, finally ready to put my poor runners up for the day, and the old wonky bone in my bad wing sets to be a-tingling once more. Who be the hurt one?"
"Madame Midgeon," I said as Ryland peeked out from my shoulder. "I know you're technically off duty, but do you think you can see one more patient?" The stern bat priestess wiggled her right arm so her attached leathery wing jiggled back and forth.
"Of course, or I'll never be able to sleep otherwise. Broken leg?"
she tisked when Ryland nodded shyly.
"Come, bring him to the second floor, where the other one is. I will make it better."
"Thanks, madam. We'll be up in a minute." She nodded her frizzy, russet head, and then she took off in a gust of flapping back to the manor.
"What would you like us to do with the poor ox, sir?"
Mel asked, as he and his brother waited with Ben and Jerry. The ox roaches seemed to be fine now and back to their lazy grazing. "We can keep them in the courtyard until the barn gets fixed," I said.
"But where would they do their business?"
Ryland blinked up at me with his splotchy face. "Yeah, it's gonna get messy, but it'll all be there waiting for you when your leg gets better," I said with a grin, and waited for him to process that. I didn't have to wait long, and the growing horror on his face was so priceless, I wished I could have taken a picture.
"Oh, but there will be mountains of dung when I'll get back,"
he whined. "Yep," I said, as my shit-eating grin got wider. "That might make you think twice about not listening when someone tells you a place is off limits." The kid's eyes lowered in shame again, but to take the sting out of my words, I made a show of discarding the leather cord the carved canterfly was threaded through, and then I pulled my doula stone out from around my neck. "Hold this," I said, and plopped the stone into his hands while I worked on untying the knot in the cord my stone was on. It was difficult to hold my laughter in at the sight of his awestruck expression as he reverently held the stone like it was the Holy Grail or something. When the cord was untied, I slipped the leather through the hole bored through the canterfly's wing so Ryland's pendant could rest next to the stone. Then I retied the knot and put the whole thing over my head, and I was pleased with the way the wooden figurine tinkled against the stone.
"It is very handsome work, Ryland. You should be proud."
Zoe finally stepped forward and put a hand on the stable boy's shoulder, which caused him to finally smile a genuine smile.
"Thank you,"
he murmured, and he was unable to say anything more as his face flamed with a combination of pleasure, pride, and embarrassment. "Now, let's get that leg fixed, hmm?" I carefully lifted Ryland back up and made the trek with Zoe up to the manor and to the second floor that was quickly becoming the manor's infirmary.
"What is the problem this time?"
Jenner grumbled as he turned down the bed in the small room so I could settle the stable boy against the pillows.
"It'd be a broken leg."
The batty priestess shuddered and shook out her wonky arm as she walked into the room carrying a small bowl of fragrant incense.
"'Tis good you are still here, because I will need you to hold the boy down."
"Why?" I asked with growing dread as Ryland clenched my wrist in fear.
"Because I can tell I will need to aggressively set the bones. And I'm sorry, boy, but it will hurt."
Madame Midgeon said and placed a thick leather strap between Ryland's teeth.
"Bite down. It helps."
What came next was a horrifying 15 seconds, in which there was a sickening crack, the feeling of Ryland's fingernails digging into my palm, and finally the split-second muffled scream the poor kid let out before he fainted dead away. "Is he okay?" I asked, as the kid's head lolled to the side.
"He will be fine. Now it is time for you all to go so I may help heal my patient,
the Batwoman said, and made a shooing gesture at all of us. As much as I cared for Rylan, it was a relief to be told to leave. Hearing him scream like that was...
Alex?
Zoe's cool water voice pulled me out of the static in my head.
He's in good hands. You did well.
Huh? I raised my head from where I was staring at my hands as they flexed. I felt a strange sort of powerlessness pass through me like a winter wind, and my head was suddenly buzzing with everything from the day. Was it really only this afternoon when the demon's son came? That seemed like eons ago, and now Rylan getting injured on the heels of Horus almost dying made everything feel so surreal, and I suddenly had an existential moment of panic.
Alex,
Zoe said again, and cupped my face between her warm palms, and her voice sounded like it was emerging through water. She peered at me with her clear ocean eyes, and I blinked at her, startled to be back in the present.
Come with me, my love. I know what you need.
Okay, I said numbly, as I let her lead me by the hand until we entered the corridor on the lower floor where the armory was located, and I vaguely wondered why she was taking me there. Instead of leading me through the double doors of the armory, however, Zoe turned right into a room I'd never been in before. Whoa, I said dully, as I took in the large space. At first, it looked like a ballroom with its floor-to-ceiling windows, glowing chandeliers, and lacquered wooden floors. But on further inspection, the things scattered around definitely didn't belong in a ballroom. For one, there were empty crates and bales of hay scattered around the space, as well as wooden pillars wrapped with padded burlap like punching bags, a large lumpy-looking floor mat, and racks of weapons all against the back wall. It was the weapons that clued me in on the purpose of the transformed space, and I turned to my wife as she stood by and silently watched me take everything in. "What is all this?" I finally asked.
"I wanted to do something for you. But I'm not the best at crafting with my hands like our Rylan is,"
Zoe said with a nervous little grin.
"So I decided to get you something practical instead. And I thought this space wasn't being used, so why not make it into a fighting room?"
"You built me my own gym?" I asked, and looked around the space again and marveled at Zoe's thoughtfulness.
"You told me sometimes you would go to places back in your world and train your hand-to-hand skills. And I wanted you to have a place where you could also do that here,"
she said, and bashfully lowered her eyes to the floor.
"I know, at least for me, when I can't feel anymore because I've felt too much, just training, practicing techniques, or even beating a sparring dummy to death helps me come back to myself."
I gaped at my cat wife as I was struck utterly speechless by her insight. It was like, with one glance, she saw right into the open book of my soul and recited something verbatim off its pages. How could she know that's exactly how I used to cope with things that were too emotional? Or just too much, like she said. For a while after my 18th birthday and after the shitty childcare system cut me loose without so much as a thank you very much, I was so lost and adrift, the only thing that kept me functioning was the mindless repetition that came with physically exerting my body. I held up to 5 24-hour gym memberships at one point in case the buzzing in my head attacked me like it usually did at random. That way, no matter what time of day it was, I could go to the nearest gym and hit the heavy bag or lift weights or just run and run on the treadmill until the swarm in my head stopped, and there was nothing left but hollow exhaustion. It had been a while since the buzzing, hopeless, set-adrift feeling gripped me so strongly, and I almost forgot what it felt like until I was already drowning under its oppressive blackness. I suspected I'd been drowning for a while now, but Zoe noticed it even before I did, and I couldn't help but stare at her and fall even more in love than I already was. Which was saying something, because I was already so gone on her, it was like dividing by zero. Hopelessly impossible.
"Do you like it?"
she asked, and shifted on her feet as my staring went on longer than she was comfortable. I don't have the words for how much I love it," I said fervently, and shook my head to get rid of the last remnants of worry still trying to cling to me. Suddenly, it was like a veil had been lifted, which made everything look just a little brighter, and the weight I didn't know I was carrying finally left my shoulders.
There you are.
Zoe whispered with a small secret smile that burned up the rest of my black fog and made the corners of my eyes sting. Then she came closer so she could run all 10 fingers through my hair before she brought my forehead down to rest against hers.
I have missed you, my Alex.
I'm so sorry I went away, I murmured, as I wrapped my arms around her waist and stared into her midnight blue eyes until that was all I could see. From the way she squeezed the base of my neck, I could tell she knew I was talking about more than just my physical absence.
It is all right,
Zoe whispered back, and she was still using her intimate voice as if we were the only two people in the universe.
But I hope you know you do not have to struggle with your burdens alone. I am here to hold you up when you lack strength. I am here to love you when you forget.
I squeezed my eyes shut as her words flayed me wide open, and I gathered her in for a healing embrace I didn't know I needed. God, my chest cavity ached, but in a tender way that was wholly and utterly good. Like when a new tooth came in, or when a broken bone was just beginning to mend. I'm scared I can't keep everybody safe, I admitted into her shoulder in a hushed voice. I just realized how much everyone means to me. Even Mel and Bowden are new farmhands. And so many people here at Ithaca are relying on me to provide them a sanctuary and—
Shh,
Zoe said, and ran her hand up and down my spine.
I know, my love. I know. I see how you are trying so hard to give everyone a home.
I pulled back so I could see into Zoe's dear face. Even though it was easier to have this conversation without looking at her since I felt so exposed, there was a thrill to letting another person in so completely. Kind of like how I imagined free-falling to Earth would feel like after stepping out of an airplane. It would have been terrifying if I didn't have a parachute, but Zoe, with her low-burning gaze, sure and capable hands, and resonating words, was the only parachute I needed to give me the courage to open up even more. Seeing Rylan in pain, I stopped as the shocking memory of him weeping on the floor of the barn with his broken leg threatened to close up my already constricted throat. I swallowed hard and then started again. It shook me. I don't know when it happened, but somehow Rylan became more than this annoying little kid who looks up to me. It's like he's a little brother, but not exactly. I've had several foster siblings in the past, but none of them ever made me feel so protective like that.
You are afraid because you see him as your pack, as if he was your own son,
Zoe stated simply.
I know, because I feel the exact same way about him as you do.
My next sentence dropped off as I frowned. Did we adopt a son without realizing it?
Maybe,
she said with a little smirk.
That sounds entirely possible between the two of us.
Huh. I grunted as my brain struggled to process the fact that the description of foster son seemed to fit on the kid when every other label fell flat.
Are you okay with that?
Zoe asked a little hesitantly as she kneaded my shoulders in that little anxious way she had. Yes, actually, I said, as a contented smile unfurled on my face. I've never really considered myself as a father before now, but it feels right somehow. I can't believe how angry I got because of how scared he made me, but now it makes sense.
I'm glad you see how much you love him through your own eyes, because I have been observing this for a while now.
She flattened her ears so she could rub the top of her head under my chin as she began to purr continuously deep inside her chest.
You are good with him. And you will make a wonderful father to our own kids when the time comes.
You think so? I asked as I rubbed circles into her lower back with my hands and relished the way she molded into me until we were all but plastered together.
Oh, yes,
she said as she sensuously rolled her warm body against mine in all the right places.
I'll admit, seeing you be a father to Rylan made me picture us with our own. And the thought makes my passions race.
My beautiful cat wife bit her lip and rubbed against me again so I could feel the stiffening of her nipples through the fabric of her tight sleeveless shirt, and a howling cavern opened up inside of me and nearly strangled me with want. I need you, Zoe, I rumbled in a low voice, and I ground us together so tightly not even a piece of paper could slide between us. My cock was already half hard and growing harder the more I gyrated my hips against hers.
I know exactly what you need, husband.
She purred and reached a hand down so she could cup my erection through my pants. Her palm was scorching hot even through the fabric, and I shuddered violently as my blood began to sing. Yes, this is what I'd been needing. Zoe, with her fresh clover scent filling my nostrils, and her gorgeous body dancing in concert with mine in a language that didn't need words. Oh, kitten, I groaned, when she unlaced the waistband of my trousers, slipped her soft hand inside, and gripped me around my thickening shaft.
Oh, please, Alex,
she moaned against my lips, and I struggled to drink her in with every parched kiss.
It's been too long. I need to feel you inside me. I need you to claim me. I need you to fill my womb again with your hot seed.